This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Yeah, I had kind of an eventful week, I would say, at least on Twitter, as I'm sure you probably noticed. Before we get to that, and I definitely have plenty to say about that, let's start with something else. Let's start with some baseball. I think we should just ease into this with some baseball, and then we'll go to the other topics.
Oh, really? You do want to bury the lead? All right, fair enough. Yeah, you definitely had a more eventful week than myself, that's for sure. So I'm down to talk baseball. I'm very into baseball, watching it all day. It's great. Love baseball.
Yeah, I've been frustrated because my main event, my other teams, I picked up, I think in the last beat, Chris List League, you have a really good team in. I'm in it with you. The one where I took Lance Lynn over Corbin Burns in the fifth, and I was thinking about Burns. Did you get Burns in that league?
You know, in the 12 teamers, I don't know what I was thinking, but I did not. I got him in two main events, but okay. not in the beat Chris List one. No,
I took Lance Lynn over him. That league, I have Tatis and he's back for now, but you know, it was doing okay. And then I got Lance Lynn hurt, so I had to sub in for him. And who do I pick up? I pick up Joe Ross. And Joe Ross gave up like 10 runs or something in that game.
Oh yeah,
I have good pitching in that league. I have Lynn, Kershaw, and Scherzer who've all been good, but so. And that one, you know, those 12s are one thing, but it's the main event that I really care about. And I just feel like my team is so good, and I just keep making errors. Like, I had Corbin on my bench this week, but Rich Hill in the lineup, and he got shelled, and Corbin pitched well. Mm-hmm. And then my team, I have Matt Olson. It's in last place, but it's got all these hitters like Stanton and Gleyber Torres and Matt Olson. And it just loaded Yoan Moncada. A lot of them haven't done much besides Olson, but Trent Grisham. But it's I've got the players. Like, I'm like, this is going to start coming up. And then Juan Soto goes on the DL. You know, it's like, it's one thing when you get off to a slow start and you're like, okay, it's a slow start. It'll turn around. But then somebody gets hurt who's like the most important player on your team. So I'm bitching a little bit. Everybody gets injuries. I actually haven't even had that many injuries, but it's just disappointing. I've been working hard on my fab. I've been doing all this stuff, agonizing over my lineups. And then I just, you know, get the Soto injury. So I know you're having a better start than I am.
Yeah, we do have Soto in League of Leagues, and Acuna went down. There's been some big injuries with the bats. And man, this one is just, it's just crazy. But Denilson Lamet lasted two innings and left with forearm soreness. I mean, if that wasn't just, it's crazy.
That was kind of the risk, right? Like, it was like, okay, he's
I know,
back.
But literally two innings. No, I avoided him everywhere too, yeah. But I just think that's just funny. Literally two innings. Yeah. I mean, that's his, yeah. So I think he's probably set to undergo the knife. But yeah, I was in two of my RotoWire online championships were in the top 25 overall last night. It's been off to a good start. So I'm sure it'll all go to hell soon, but so far so good with my, pitcher heavy strategy. So, I'm enjoying baseball, but I'm sure the injuries are surely just right around the corner. I have Giolito in a couple of leagues. So, I mean, you know, the pain's starting. I mean, that was 8 a.m. that, you know, the Monday morning. Cool. I mean, it was before he'd be getting out of bed, and then La Russa brought him out for the second inning for more. I mean, so I have him in a main and in a league with you. So, I mean, it's, the hits will definitely start coming, but yeah, no, I'm off to a good baseball start. And even my San Francisco Giants are like good. In a division with the Padres and Dodgers is pretty hopeless for this year, but the rebuild is starting a little earlier than expected. And it's really weird with baseball. Like, I'm just convinced that, like, I mean, you get in, it's not just the making the right decisions, but it's the, whatever the development, the people behind the scenes. I mean, they got these Descalfanis and Alex Woods and Aaron Sanchez and Kevin Gossman. They all just perform better. You know, I mean, I don't know. It's just interesting that baseball can just have, it's just the behind the scenes guys that often turn around the franchise, not just the ability to draft the prospects.
Yeah. It's a lot of development that happens in some organizations. Like, the Indians always develop pitchers. Like, I don't know how, but they just keep churning out pitchers. They lost Bauer and they lost Carlos Carrasco and they lost Corey Kluber, but they have Shane Bieber and they have, you know, they lost Clevenger. I mean, there's so many guys, and you know, they just keep churning out new aces on that team. And some teams don't develop, you know, the Orioles, like, it's kind of, if you're in, it's a tough park to develop pitchers, but they just don't develop any. And Gausman gets out, Bundy gets out, and they're really good.
Yeah.
You know, and we'll see if Alex Cobb is good. I mean, he didn't start out in Baltimore, but it's a thing. And it's hard to say how much is development and park or just the environment, but it's definitely a thing. So I was going to brag about one thing. So I have Giolito and AL Tout. And of course, that was a horrible outing on Monday. And in AL only league, my whip was still under one after the Giolito start.
That's impressive.
Yeah. I had like Rodon, I just had all these crazy, you know, insane performances from the pitcher. So that's my one good team right now. I love my main event team. If Soto's out, you know, for 10 or 12 days, if he's out for a month, I'm in trouble, but I still like the team. Matt Olson's doing well, but I just need these guys to start hitting, you know. Stanton needs some home runs. Gleyber Torres hasn't done anything. So I just need those kind of core guys to hit, but yeah, it's fun. I'm just trying to. Pianowski actually. I don't know. I don't know why. I've done this for 25 years, and for some reason, like, Pianowski said something that just kind of changed my mindset a little bit. I was saying, I just can't take it. All these mistakes I make. You know, sitting the wrong guy, starting the wrong guy, errors that are like, you know, there's, it's just like lineup setting in football. That you're always 50-50 call. You're going to make errors. I mean, you can't. How many 50-50 coin flips are you, even 40-60? Are you going to get right? Well, you're going to get a ton of them wrong. And it just drives me crazy how many errors I make. And he's like, well, you know, I think you're looking at it wrong. You don't have to be perfect. You just have to be better than the average, not the average guy, but better than everybody else who's also making a million mistakes. And it kind of made me feel better. I was like, yeah, I don't have to get these right. I just have to get them right more often than everybody else. And it's just like, because I just can't take it. I just can't take sitting Alex Cobb when he struck out 10 last week and then sitting Corbin this week and having Corbin in last week. So it's just, you know, I need to just relax and just, okay, I'm just going to do a good job of setting these lineups and that's it.
I had Rodon on my bench in one main event and two OCs. And I mean, that was a perfect game. I mean, it was because it was a zero whip. I mean, that's bad. I mean, what if I'm at the end of the year really am in contention? Oh. I mean, that could be impressive. Oh. But the reason
that will
why
screw you. That will kill you. I mean, if you're in contention, a perfect game, I mean, what that's going to do for your whip. I mean, these things matter and you can never get them back. But then again, you're probably going to luck into some stuff, you know, where like you made a great call that you might not have made.
And he was like injured or ill. He was ill at the beginning of the week. So I really, and a lot of those teams are the 12 teamers. I'm pretty loaded in pitching. So I'm not like, you know, overly upset. It's like he legitimately had an injured sign on him when you were making that decision. So it's like unclear if he was even going to start that week. So, anyway, I will.
And it was Carlos Rodon. Yeah. I mean, you know, before that no-hitter, it was some dude. He was some dude who, like, was once a prospect a long time ago and had been injured a ton and looked decent in spring training. That's all he was. I mean, it wasn't like, you know.
Yeah, I'm happy that I have him everywhere. I remember I was going to say now. I think why your mindset is that way, though, and mine is too, is because we have the overall in our head is probably what it is. Like, that's why we feel like we need to be perfect. Like, our aim is high. So that might be it. Because in a normal league, you're right, you know, just better than 12 other guys or 11 other guys or whatever. But maybe in our heads, we just have this overall goal. So we feel like you got to be pretty much perfect. Maybe there's something to that. What do you think?
I think there is, but
I did hear you say that on the XM show. And that was my counter in my head to you, is that I think you're probably thinking more overall.
Well, I am. But I remember when Glenn Schroeder won it and we had him on the radio show. This is 2015.
Yeah, he made a bunch of mistakes, right?
And I said, I made the fatal mistake. I've told the story 100 times, but I picked Michael Wacha over Arrieta that year. And Arrieta was one spot above him. He's the highest on my cheat sheet. I need a pitcher in round 7. Oh, I saw this Harvard guy say that spring training actually does have some predictive value or whatever, even though everybody says it doesn't. And, you know, they were pretty close and Wacha had a way better spring. So I took Wacha. I just, you know, made a judgment call and moved him up, you know, picked him ahead of Arrieta, even though he's one spot below him on the cheat sheet. Next pick, Glenn takes Arrieta. Arrieta wins the Cy Young with like a 170 something ERA and wins the whole thing. And I take 12th, one spot out of the overall money. I finished second in our league. And I don't think I win it with Arrieta, but I probably finished third. He almost certainly doesn't win it. If that gets reversed, right? I mean, because he had, you know, the best pitcher in baseball. He deserved to win. I made the bad pick. He capitalized. That's what everybody does at every pick. But anyway, that's just a side note that I screwed that up. But so we had him on the show afterward, and he, you know, he won the whole thing. And I think he didn't win it before, but he'd won a lot of stuff before in that league. And I said, you know, did you make a lot of errors? Because I think I probably had the same feeling back then, like all the screw-ups I made, including that pick. And he's like, oh, I made tons of errors. You know, he was just like, now he wasn't even close to perfect winning the main event. So
yeah,
he obviously
did, I like hearing that.
He did a great job, obviously. You know, he did better than anyone else, but you know, not even close to perfect. Because when you look at the math, you know, it's like trying to guess somebody's seed in Bitcoin. It's like 2 to the 256. Like, you're not gonna get it. You know, if you understand what that number is, you're just not gonna get it. If you do the math of these, you know, 2 to the 256, 2 times 2 times 2, 256 times. Well, you probably have 256 decisions. They're close to 50-50. Maybe not. Maybe you have 100 decisions, 150 lineups, free agents, what to be, you know, over the course of a year, you might have two, you know, whatever, something like that many decisions. And if they're close to 50-50, to get them all right would be like, you know, picking out somebody's Bitcoin seed, basically. So it's the math is overwhelming that you would get it right. You're going to get at least 30% wrong. You know, you're probably going to get at least 35%. It's like picking games against the spread. It's like you're not going to go 256-0. You're going to go. By the way, it's kind of cool that Bitcoin is 2 to the 256th, and so is now if they the 17th week, they're going to screw this up. But that's the same chances of getting every game right against the spread for a whole year, 16-0 every week. Isn't that crazy?
Right.
There's that many NFL
that
at least last year. It's the same. Odds of guessing somebody's Bitcoin seed is the same odds as getting every game against the spread right.
Yeah, I know that 256 is in your head when I do all the predict the records before the season. You got to get that right. You know, fact checkers will be like, you have too many wins or whatever. But yeah, you got to make that right. That's interesting. I did not put that together with the Bitcoin.
Real man predicts every team goes 10-6.
Yeah, that's going to change now with the trying to talk over unders is all weird now because of the extra game.
I don't like it. I don't like it at all, man. It just screws with records, you know, passing yardage totals, just everything. It's just, there's just no reason for it. There's no good about it. There's nothing good about it. It's just stupid. It's going to make them more money, which is why they're doing it, which is understandable. But it's just, as someone who covers football, there's nothing good about it at all.
I mean, it's also really competitively imbalanced too. You know, now half the teams are playing, you know, one more home game.
Right.
It's weird, but I understand why they're doing it. And I won't personally complain. I like more football. I love it and will watch it and consume it and gamble and whatever. But I hear you. And it'll be weird. And it definitely, I don't know. It might even create some other unforeseen problems like the actual resting or whatever. I don't know. I mean, there could be some weird issues.
That's what I mean. Like, you get more, but like, look at the NBA, right? The NBA has too many games, so they rest all their players unpredictably.
Yep.
Greg Ambrosius goes to a game with his kid and all the stars and the Bucks are resting. I mean, it's just a rip.
Yeah.
So you're getting more football, but more, we obviously know if they made 30 games, it would be lower quality. So there's not some infinite expansion you can do without losing quality. And I would even think 16 might be past that point. It's possible that the optimal schedule is 12, right? I mean, that could actually be the optimal amount of quality. Yeah, you get fewer weeks, but it's so high quality. There's fewer injuries. There's a couple of bye weeks in there. Everybody's healthy. They're going all out. Every game is so important. I mean, that it may be the 12's optimal. It may be the 16's optimal, but it's certainly not 30. And so as you go up, yeah, you're going to get more football, but at what cost? Is there a loss of quality? And I would think that there is, and you know, maybe go 18 if you're going to go 17, just to even some things up with home road and other things. But it's just, it's just stupid.
Yeah, I'll probably just add another bye and then add more. You know, that's more revenue there too. At least they got rid of one preseason game. But football, real quick, man. Justin Fields has been revealed to have epilepsy. Do you have any thoughts on that? I was just so sold on him. He went vegan, which of course we don't love, but that might be because of that. I don't know. Epilepsy sounds like kind of a serious thing, but I guess medication can control it. Do you have any thoughts on that?
I don't know much about epilepsy, and I know some people, I don't want to say this definitively, but I think I've read anecdotally at least that some people have changed their diet and stopped the attacks at least. I don't know if they would never get an attack, but that they've at least put them in remission so they just don't ever have a fit. I don't want to say I'm 100% sure, but I sort of recall reading that. Depending on diet, and you know, you and I don't think vegans get enough, you know, nutrition. Most of them, at least. And playing football, I would not want my rookie quarterback to be a vegan. I just feel like football is a rough sport, and I don't know. I just don't know if it's enough nutrition, enough of the you know the amino acids and the things you need to build muscle and protein. And it was funny though, because I eat a lot of meats, and I think it's, you know, good quality meat is really healthy for you, and fat and protein is really good, and it's the carbohydrates that are the biggest risk. But I was walking my dog in the park near us, and there's this Nepalese guy who's friendly and has a dog. And it's funny, his dog's a puppy, but Oscar's really small. And his dog just wrestles Oscar, and Oscar loses like 4 out of 5 of the wrestling matches, but keeps coming back. But he's just not as strong as his dog. He's smaller. But anyway, I started talking with this guy. He's friendly, speaks English well. And he's like, yeah, I used to eat a lot of meat, and I was a boxer in Muay Thai and some other martial arts, and he did all this stuff. And he's like, yeah, but I just started going vegetarian, and he's like, I feel so much more in my body, not in my brain. He's saying something about the nervous system, how it sort of, you know, meat, you know, in the Ayurvedic medicine, and I know a little bit about it, but there's different sort of properties. There's 3 different kinds of foods and 3 different kinds of bodies. And if you have too much of one kind, you could be very like mentally active and neurologically very stimulated in your brain. But he's like, ever since he became a vegetarian, he eats fish now and then, but he's mostly eats, you know, he doesn't eat like red meat. He said he feels his in his whole body, you know, not just his head. He doesn't just locate himself in his head anymore. And he had no agenda. He's not woke about anything. He was not like, you know, there's no like judgment. He was just like talking, and he was a pretty peaceful guy. Like I was just, you know, he was very calm. And it's the only time, I swear to God, in the last, I don't know, 20 years that I talked to a vegetarian, pescatarian, vegetarian type of guy where I was like, huh, I'll think about that. I'll look into that a little bit. The only thing that turned me off is he said, you should watch the movie The Game Changers, which I've heard about, and it's been like just, they said there's just so much bad data and sort of salesmanship in it. Even vegans and vegetarians have written about that movie. It's like, it's really like, it makes you know, some very sketchy arguments that are not based on science and tries to pass them off. So that sort of turned me off because that movie has like a real agenda. But this guy did not have an agenda. He was just very nice. And it made me think like, maybe all the PD Mangan stuff is true, like in just a sort of blood chemistry health thing, but maybe there's another aspect of it. So I'm not saying I'm going to do that, and I haven't really changed my diet much, but it did just sort of, you know, I try to keep an open mind, you know, to things like that.
Absolutely. And I could see things being different for every person. It's totally different health wise. And it seems like it's working for him, regardless if it physically is or not, at least it is mentally. So, I'm going to try to keep an open mind too. Yeah, totally. Yeah.
So I'm not advocating that, but it was just the first time that somebody didn't give me that sort of vegan vegetarian spiel with some agenda and some woke, you know, attitude about it. And, you know, and I wasn't just immediately like tuned it out and said, yeah, whatever, you know, like didn't even take it seriously. But this guy, just a nice guy, like explaining his experience. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. Maybe I'll look into it.
Always good to learn some wisdom from your elders. I like it.
No, he's younger than me. That guy's like probably like 28, 30. I don't know how old he's.
Oh, okay.
I was the elder.
All right. Anyway, so Fields, hopefully, epilepsy, hopefully, you know, seizures could be dangerous. But so we're 8 days away from the draft, and I'm definitely as into that as ever. Trey Lance now being talked about, and yeah, so that's where we sit with Mac Jones, of course. So that's where we sit with that. What about you, man? You want to get to the main event?
Yeah, sure. So I probably a lot of the people who listen to the podcast follow me on Twitter, and I know a lot of them do because they were reaching out to me, DMs and in the comments and mentions. It started out with a tweet on Sunday night. I think it was Sunday night. And it was just, you know, I tweet about stuff. I don't really. And I try to say stuff that I try to word it cleverly and have a little impact, like so that people will connect with it. So I write, people talk about wearing masks outside to make others feel comfortable. But I'll be honest, when I see that, and to the majority here, I feel uncomfortable, like I'm surrounded by compliant people who would follow orders to burn me at the stake as a matter of civic duty. And then I followed it up. I replied to it. I said, so on the one hand, they might feel like they're doing the kind thing, even if there's no scientific basis for it. But be aware that it does not register as kindness to everyone. Seeing people follow arbitrary orders for appearance sake creeps the hell out of me. So that was the two tweets that kind of set off the whole thing. And I get there's this whole like mask, anti-mask bullshit going on that I have zero interest in, and I'm probably not very attuned to it because I don't really get into that. And I'm not politically on like the team of these people or not on the team. So I don't really care. But for me, it was more just like saying, hey, the tail risk for me isn't you're going to spread the disease outside, because as far as I can tell, the science says that's not a thing. The tail risk for me is you guys know this probably doesn't spread the disease, yet you're doing this anyway. And that kind of arbitrary compliance for signaling purposes to show that you're doing it, even though there's no way to spread a disease, that's the kind of shit that creeps me out.
The economy is made up of real people doing real stuff, and it affects everything. Which you obviously know since you're a real person doing real stuff. Marketplace is here to help you get smart about everything beyond the what of the day's business and economic news. We dig into the how and the why with the real people driving our economy. From big tech and interest rates to small businesses and what's happening at the Fed, Marketplace breaks it all down so you don't have to. Listen to Marketplace wherever you get your podcasts.
That's telling, actually, you say you just being basically just so it's so not in your consciousness that, yeah, I would avoid that just politically. You know what I mean? Like, I would just, it's a hot button issue right now. I mean, it's big publications like The Atlantic and a couple others have approached it, that subject, this very week, and it got a ton of pushback and blowback. But yours did as well. I mean, it went viral, as the kids say. And yeah, it got even personal and whatnot. So, I mean, it's, wasn't great, man. I mean, I was getting worked up seeing some of these responses. I mean, it's so everyone should absolutely read your Substack that you give more nuance to what you're trying to say. But
I felt it was nuanced. Like, I know people think it was so over the top, but I feel uncomfortable. Like, I'm surrounded, not I am surrounded. Like, it's a simile. Compliant people who would follow orders to burn me at the stake as a matter of civic duty. And it's, I feel, you know, it's sort of like, I'm a little bit paranoid about this scenario. That's when I see people wearing masks in a situation where they just don't need them, but they're doing it to make others feel comfortable. To me, that's a little scary. They're following orders, following rules that don't have any scientific basis, as far as I can tell, in order to make others feel comfortable. You know, I don't want to make anyone think that I'm a dangerous person. You know, that's sort of the message. Mm-hmm. Ooh, I don't want to be dangerous. I better not, you know, breathe in the fresh air, even though there's no harm to anybody. Ooh, I'm going to be safe and put the mask. That scares me, that behavior. I feel like that tweet conveyed that. And I even spelled it out in the second one. You know, they think they're doing the kind thing, even though there's no basis, but be aware, it doesn't register as kindness to me. People following arbitrary orders for appearance sake creeps me out. I felt like it was pretty clear. But you're right. There is this whole backdrop of sort of tribalism where I guess Trump was anti-mask, or at least for a while he was, and a lot of his supporters were. And then, of course, anything Trump says has got to be wrong. So there are all these other people are pro-mask, and the anti-mask people show you studies that say masking doesn't even make any difference anywhere. You see studies that say Florida got rid of the masks in Texas, and they're no worse off than California. They're better off. Other people say, no, indoors masking really matters, or some people have other studies. You know, they have a war of studies, you know. But as far as I can tell, I don't know about the indoor. And it's not really an issue because when I'm at a supermarket, I have to wear one to go into the supermarket. But outdoors, I don't wear it because I'm following the science. But people who don't, you know, if you're really terrified, fine, wear the mask outside. But I was specifically talking about people who are only wearing it to make others feel comfortable. And to me, that's scary because you're basically saying, I don't want to be seen as harmful. I want you to be comfortable. I don't want you to think I'm harmful, even though you're not harming them. So what happened? So, of course, a lot of people were like implying that this tweet would kill people. I'm not really sure how, since I was talking about outside. I was killing people with these tweets and these guys dunking on me like, oh, I don't wear pants, like making terrible analogies. What if I don't want to wear pants? It creeps me out when people wear pants. Just really not applicable stuff. You know, so I had a little fun back and forth sort of dunking on them. They're dunking on me. It's unpleasant. I feel like the tweet wasn't offensive in my opinion. It was offensive to them maybe because they're in this, you know, mask, anti-mask, religious crusade against each other, but I'm not part of that. But I guess I didn't realize it, so I stepped into it. And and so, okay, fine, it was unpleasant, but I dunk on them, make fun of them, whatever. It's Twitter. I'm a grown up, words on Twitter. But then it took a little turn. One guy, and I'm not going to give out names or URLs, I didn't even actually honestly remember them. I did screenshot a bunch of them. And they were like, when did RotoWire go full QAnon? Obviously, it has nothing to do with anything I'm saying, and it's just libel. It's pure libel to put, first of all, to mention RotoWire, which obviously my colleagues see, and second, to bring my job into it at all, and B, to libel us. Like, what does this have to do with anything? And, you know, so I called the guy out, and this guy, at first, before he went there, was talking about it's about empathy and all this, and Mr. Empathy basically just tries to go to my job and get me, you know, have professional consequences for my this horrible tweet I made, and also libel us. Okay, so that's one. And a couple other guys, I guess they must know Jeff. Jeff's not even in the conversation. Jeff Erickson's just minding his own business, doing his own thing. And these guys go to Jeff, and I only see it because it's in like another side thread. And they're like, hey, you know, is Chris going to delete this tweet? I mean, it doesn't really reflect well on RotoWire. And Jeff's like, Chris says whatever he wants. What are you talking about? You know, I don't control Chris's free speech. And they're like, I know, but, you know, and then this other guy's like, oh, and you should hear the stuff they talk about on the podcast. And think about this. These guys disagreed with the content of my tweet. Like, I think it's harmless. They didn't. That's fine. Okay, it's a disagreement. They have a different opinion than I do. Fine. Some guys dunked on me and were dicks about it. Okay, that's annoying. I don't like that. Fine. It's Twitter, right? You want to be a dick? Be a dick. I can block, mute, whatever. It's no big deal. If you don't like what I'm saying, you could just block, mute, unfollow me, right? I mean, it's in my feed. I don't follow these guys. I'm not in their thread or I'm not like responding to them or going to them. These guys went into my feed. I don't even know who they are. And they quote tweet me and they start dunking on me. And then they come to Jeff and they try to imply, you know, that little like, well, I just don't know how it looks for the site. And, you know, I mean, what are they trying to do? They're trying to say, look, man, like this guy is a problem for you. You need to talk to him. You know, this is a, you know, how they, people are terrified of the social media mob because it's vicious, right? What are they really trying to do? They're going after me economically. They want to cause harm to me and my family economically in real life. So they disagree with my tweet. Okay. That I'm tweeting, you know, I don't follow them. I don't know them. And they're trying to, from the tweet and, you know, again, the tweet is people talk about wearing masks outside to make others feel comfortable. But I'll be honest, when I see that, and it's the majority here, I feel uncomfortable, like I'm surrounded by compliant people who would follow orders to burn me at the stake as a matter of civic duty. I get paranoid as hell, in other words, when I see people doing compliant stuff that has no scientific basis just to make others feel comfortable. That makes me uncomfortable. That was the tweet. And for that tweet, these guys are trying to honestly cause real life harm to my family and me. So that's an act to me of aggression. And I was like, I know this happens. People are angry. There's a lot of hateful people out there. But like, really? You're gonna try to harm me and my family because I made a tweet you didn't like that you could easily just ignore, unfollow, block, whatever. You don't want to see my tweets anymore. You have to come in and try to harm me. And so when I see somebody do something like that, you really have a choice, right? You either can say, okay, I'm going to delete this tweet and I better not talk about this kind of stuff. Or you can, you know, say, look, I don't accept that. I don't accept that. I reject that you are the arbiter of what kind of discourse we can have in this country or in this world, on this platform. It's not up to you to say what is acceptable and what's not. If I want to tweet something, it's in public. People see it. And it's not up to you to silence me with economic threats for the tweet I made. It's just not, you're just not the arbiter of what can be said. And the fact that you would tattletale on me in such a cowardly way, to me, it's just, but what you're doing by tattletaling is you're not even man enough to take me on. You're trying to quietly behind the scenes cause me harm. Why would someone be so sick and hateful to do something like that? And I got into it with another guy who was like, well, you know, when your tweets are actually causing real life death to people, then you know, measures are needed or whatever. Then it hit me. I was like, oh, this guy somehow has gotten in his head that my tweet is killing people, is literally killing people. And he thinks that we're having like a life and death discussion right now on Twitter. Like he's saving lives. I'm killing lives. Okay. So think about it. If I'm actually killing people with my tweets, with the tweet that I just told you that I get super freaked out when people are complying for no reason, that's my feeling of paranoia when people are complying. If that tweet is killing people, I'm a killer on the loose, right? Like I'm a dangerous person. I tweet things like this. Well, going after my job is like a very mild thing, really. I mean, Dalton, if you're a killer, I really have I'm obligated to do much more than just go after your job, right? I mean, I need to go after you, maybe imprison you, physically stop you, right? I mean, I might have to physically stop you. I might have to put you in a prison where you can't have access to the internet. I mean, if your tweets are literally killing people, what measures am I justified in taking? And I don't know the extent to which they just say that or believe that, but they behave as though they are justified. They're not just trying to destroy my livelihood. They're doing it righteously. They're feeling good about doing it, like they're doing the right thing. And that is scary. That is dangerous, and it's sick.
Do you think most of the people are truly offended, or is it a show, or what is it? Do you think that really did truly offend people, or do you think it's more of a, I don't know. What's going on here? Because that, yeah, I don't know. It's all crazy, because, I mean, it just to get for that tweet to result in, you know, what it did is just, it's kind of wild times we live in.
Right. And they're always trying to say, oh, you're complaining. You tweeted that. If you want to be an asshole or a troll, I'm never going to screenshot your tweets. I'm never going to, I mean, I may quote tweet you and mock you back, but I'm never going to write a Substack post about being trolled. I'm talking about guys tattletaling on me in the most cowardly fashion, like to my business partner, and trying to affect my livelihood over a tweet and the tweet that I read. It's not a tweet disparaging vulnerable people or, you know, it's not a racist tweet or something like that. This is just a disagreement these guys had, and they went and they tried to damage my livelihood on purpose. And the hatefulness, I understand where it comes from now. It's they think they've somehow equated it as you're a killer. I need to stop you. And therefore, and your question is what, do they really believe that you're a killer? Well, that's the reason he says, if your rhetoric, this other guy says, if your rhetoric destroys another person's actual life, I'd say people might be justified in attempting to stop that. It's a larger stake. Okay, so he said it. They think this results in deaths, what you're saying. So even though The Atlantic just published the same damn thing, you know, the Washington Post published the same damn thing, that outdoor, and just scientifically, this is the evidence.
Yeah,
we're not even allowed to talk about the science because it's causing deaths, in their opinion. And I just think they have this opinion because they were told this because Trump had the opposite opinion. I mean, scientifically, it doesn't matter whether Trump was for it or against it. That's not a scientific basis. Whether Trump was for it or against it, or whether your tribe was for it or against it, doesn't matter. What matters is scientifically what's actually going on. And as far as I can tell from the overwhelming evidence, outdoor spread at distance is really not a thing. So, but that's not even the point, right? I'm not really here to debate the danger of outdoor spread. I think the bigger point is, okay, you disagree. You might think it is a thing. Fine. Yeah, I mean, there's probably some studies that show that, or somebody that thinks that. It's fine. This is a disagreement, and you're coming after me with aggression. And I really want people, if you want to see, it's at Chris_list, the threads are all there. If you want to see the people, I'm just saying, this is, their words are there. I mean, I didn't, I'm not going to their bosses. Actually, one of my followers added one of their bosses, and I told him to delete it. I DM'd him. I said, just delete that. I was like, I don't need to tattletale to his boss. I'm just going to hang him with his own words. You know, I'm just going to let the public record show this is what these guys do. And so, you asked, are they really offended genuinely, or is it just a show thing, like just a signaling thing, right? You just asked that before?
Yeah, right.
And I think it is a signaling thing, but I think that people like that, they take their beliefs almost completely from what other people around them think. So it's a fine line to say, do they really believe that, or are they just doing it for show? They believe what they need to believe for show. I mean, it's mixed.
It's
like you and I, right? We live in society, right? And it would probably be easier for me in my job just to like have the party line belief. Orange man bad, and it would just be easier, right? We'd get less pushback. It's what it would make in our circles, it'd be easier. And instead I'm sort of like, I don't give a shit about the orange man. He's just never... It's an important part of my life. It doesn't have a huge impact in my moral universe. It's just some douchebag who had a reality show of a presidency for 4 years. But to fit in, it would be better to believe that he was like the embodiment of evil, right? That would be a belief that would make things go more smoothly in my circles. So I think a lot of these people, they've just sort of learned to believe what it is that's most advantageous for them socially and professionally. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that does. That's a good answer. Yeah.
And so when they see something that's sort of outside of that box, that's, the bad thing, saying that, masking outside is threatening you, then they're outraged, but they're outraged because they've learned to be outraged, to perform that outrage, to get clout and get along. That's my view. And then there are,
and there'll be people that will jump right behind. That'll definitely, you can confidently know people will agree with that view too. You know what I mean? Like it'll totally agree with.
That's why they have that view. Too. Like literally, what people will agree with is the basis for their beliefs. And I read a really interesting essay about this called Mundia and Modia. This guy wrote it. He's basically like, some people are in the world of humans where what's true is what people think is true. The fashions, the styles, the beliefs, the. You know, what's true is, of course, that the good people are the good guys and the bad guys are the bad guys. And then other people are more in the realm of physics and science. And he didn't disparage the people version. I probably mentioned this before. He said it's important for lots of different relationships and things. But he, you know, said he leaned more toward the science thing. And I feel like I'm a little harsher on the people part of it. It's fine to be friendly with your colleagues or personable. But I feel it's very important to have your beliefs determined by, as best as you can tell, the truth, reality, science, facts, not what's in fashion, what everybody else believes. What's advantageous for me to believe to get ahead, as far as I can tell.
Yeah. It sucks that Trump's gone and it's still the same exact divisiveness, like this craziness in that aspect there, that it's just you're on one side or the other. And did you notice that some of those some comments were made about the people you're calling out who called you know your job into question? People are like, oh, of course it's so and so. You know, they're a part of Team Good. They do this consistently or whatever. You know, yeah. Did you notice that?
Not only did I notice that, you know, the tweet had like, I mean, I don't likes or whatever, but like, you know, it was 10-1 likes to comments, and I would say most of the comments were positive, even though most people comment or angry, you know, when they comment. So it was like,
oh yeah.
And then when, you know, when I started getting the pushback and fighting with these guys, there was like a million people just weighing in, you know, I mean, I had to block people. So there was obviously people who were not weighing in on my side. So I blocked, you know, probably 20 people, but there was, but there were a lot of people weighing in. And then the DMs, my DMs were just filled with things from prominent people that you probably might know of saying, hey man, you're my hero. I wish I could tweet this, but I can't, you know, professionally, I can't, I feel like a coward. But I'm really glad you're doing this. I mean, the DMs were lighting up. And it was like, and I was like, thanks, I appreciate that. And he's like, I'm so sorry you're dealing with this. And I was like, don't feel sorry for me. Feel sorry for them. Because you know what happened with Orbitz, right? You know what happened with Orbitz. You know what happened with this. I mean, look, I'm not just totally on, you know, my own to just go totally scorched earth. But you know how I am with these kind of things. And injustice is an injustice, right? You want to disagree or whatever, that's fine. You know, you want to be an asshole on Twitter, it's fine. You want to start causing harm to me and my family over a tweet? Really? You're going to come at me like that? Aggression? Steal from me? Take what I've earned, the value I've created, and try to come and take it from me because you don't agree with me? You think that's a valid thing to do? And then, you know, I'll talk about the post, but, the, you know, these people that were, they were like, I'm scared to tweet. I mean, there's so many guys that were like, listen, I'm scared to do this. I mean, think about a climate where people are scared to even support what I said publicly. There was a lot of people who did anyway, but there were dozens of people who privately said, I'm sorry, I want to say something, but, you know, and I get it because you don't want the hassle. You don't want your boss talking to you. You don't want to get fired. You don't want to not be able to pay your bills because a couple of guys thought, I'm going to police the discourse. I'm in charge of what can and can't be said. And these guys aren't, and if you look at how Twitter is, there's a few people who maybe they're, you know, have more security in their job or whatever that speak openly, but most people just keep it very vanilla unless it's totally in the party line, unless it's, you know, the, you're saying the thing you're allowed to say, and then they'll dunk on somebody and mercilessly bully them. I mean, anyway, so a lot of people reached out and were like, you're my hero. I'm so glad you're speaking out. I wish I could. So, you know, the original tweet, a lot of people are like, well, I get what you're saying, but you're just being so paranoid. It's not like that. And I wrote another Substack post called Compliance, which is like, well, maybe I'm just being paranoid. It's possible. But I mean, people are scared to just voice any opinion on Twitter. They're just afraid to like talk about anything. I disagree. I think mass this. I think mass. It's just an opinion. You're not murdering anybody. Words aren't murder. We disagree. We can debate this. We are in a climate where people aren't able to just express ideas, to speak, you know, what they believe. So much so that people are, one guy just said to the compliance piece, he wrote, yeah, that's why I have an anonymous Twitter handle. I would never tweet under my own name. Like everybody's terrified. So we have an environment where everybody's terrified to say anything. And you feel it. I feel it. I said one, I mean, come on, pretty innocuous thing. and people are trying to go after my job because of it. And then, and I'm kind of thinking, well, maybe I'm not so paranoid. Maybe they could have proven me wrong by ignoring it, you know, by laughing and saying, ha, that's a crackpot idea. That's ridiculous. And nobody doing anything. And I'd be like, oh, maybe I'm just being paranoid. But the opposite happened. These guys were like, not only, this guy's killing people by saying this, and not only, you know, am I going to disagree or unfollow him or block him or whatever, I'm going to try to cause real economic harm to him and his family in real life. And then I'm like, okay, this is a real environment. And people know it. That's why they're not tweeting.
100%. Yeah. I was curious your motivation behind the tweet, but I guess it was just totally innocuous is the answer to that, is that you weren't looking into getting into a debate on Twitter about it all, I guess. Because I know part of you said that you feel better when you talk about it. So like, I'm too lazy to get in these debates too. Yes, there's a real worry about it too. That really exists. But part of me also is like, I don't know, I don't really want to get confrontational over Twitter. But I don't know, is part of it, it is cathartic, you talking about it and maybe teaching? Because even though I don't want to do it, I like admire people that are willing to like put their neck out and deal with all the crap of backlash. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, there's a certain something about that that's certainly admirable, like for sure.
Well, my approach is I have a following of 17,000 people or whatever. And I think it's a lot of them. It's not like, you know, most people have unfollowed who don't actually like what I'm saying, but you know, there's always new ones to unfollow. And I feel like, you know, I'm almost 50 in a week or two, and I've got some observations I want to express. I feel like I have knowledge to share. You know, I go down rabbit holes. I read a lot. I try to make my case about things, and I've learned a lot from other people who do the same thing. You know, I read Glenn Greenwald all the time. I learned so much from the guy just about how things work, and I just learn from him, and I love that he's willing to say the truth as far as he sees it. Yeah. Nobody knows, you know, everybody does their best. Who's being earnest? You do your best. And I feel like I want to do that. I have an obligation as a human being to do that, and especially in a time where you're not allowed to do it, where people need to see an example of somebody's willing to tell things like they are, to say what they really think. Now, I can be mistaken. I didn't think Biden would win the nomination, let alone the president. I've been wrong about a lot of things. But when at the time it was an earnest opinion, it wasn't just some talking point I was trying to say. I really thought that. And so I think it's important. And I don't like this. I didn't want pushback. I like retweets. I like likes. Yeah. I like, absolutely, I feel the same way. I'm getting paranoid of this. There's way too much compliance. There's way too much fear. There's way too much hate. Where someone will go, the hateful people that would try to take your job because they disagree. This is not an acceptable state of affairs. Dissent is not permitted outside a very narrow window, permissible by whom? You know, by the oligarchy, the corporate people who are generating these messages. I don't know exactly who it's coming from, but there's this very narrow window of, it's a narrowing window of what you can say. And I don't like that. And I feel like someone has to speak out. And if not me, then who? You know what I mean? I'm one of the owners of the company. I'm, you know, older. I feel I'm in Portugal.
Right,
I mean, you know, I am an independent minded person.
Totally.
If not me, then who? Right? If not me, then who? And, you know, so you have to have a little courage. I don't like it. I don't like these people misinterpreting me deliberately, insulting me, trying to embarrass me. I don't like that. Of course I don't like that. But that's not, even that, as much as that's just kind of gross behavior, it's when you start to try to harm me in real life, you know, that you're really crossing a line. I mean, I can't emphasize how disgusted with that behavior people are. I mean, the messages I got were like, that kind of behavior disgusts me so much, to try to destroy the public square, to destroy creativity, destroy sort of the marketplace of ideas, destroy the vibrancy of our culture and our back and forth, the ability to find truth through adversarial positions, to destroy that and to be like a little minder from, you know, in a North Korean police state and be watching what other people say in their feeds. They're not following you. It'd be one thing if I jumped into their feed and started harassing them and arguing with them about something they were doing and CCing their boss or something. No, I was just, I don't even follow those guys. I don't know those guys. So to me, like, I just want to emphasize so much, like, how gross this behavior is. And it's got such a chilling effect on the discourse. I mean, I'm telling you, I got a million messages like this, and many people are disgusted by it. So if you feel, you know, sort of worried and disgusted, you are not alone. I cannot tell you how many messages, and I'm not going to obviously name anybody. There was some nice stuff also that came out of this guy. I want to get some names on this podcast. A couple guys subscribed. They said, well, one guy, and I got to get his name because it's hilarious. But he was so disgusted with what was going on, that he only has a score sheet league. He doesn't really need RotoWire. It's a score sheet. James Ferguson. He says, I hate to pay for such things since I play in one score sheet league with no cash prize. Doesn't even have a cash prize. But I feel it's important to support those who stand up to the woke mob. And another guy, Keith Schneider, said, subscribe without taking the free trial. A real man never subject himself to something that could prevent catastrophic consequences. You know, these guys are subscribing to support the fact that, you know, I didn't just knuckle over. And they, anyway, it's really nice. I mean, you know, James, you don't need to renew like this. You know, if you don't need the product, that's really nice. But, you know,
no, we found your motivation. Signups, RotoWire signups.
Well, it's funny. No, but you're right. But it's fun. It is funny because, and I'm going to say this in earnest, because my partners are cool and, like, you know, we're friends and we've known each other forever, and they know that I'm also not going to cross the line in terms of saying something truly offensive, attacking a vulnerable group or something. You know, that's not me. And so okay. But at the same time, you know, when you speak the truth on Twitter and publicly, there can be backlash or attempted backlash. And so if you agree with this and you think it's important, and James, like, went the extra mile, but and you actually have a fantasy team and you do fantasy sports, so you're RotoWire is a great product. RotoWire.com/pod. Be nice if you said why, you know, if you signed them because the Real Man Wood or the Twitter thing or whatever. But the point is, rotowire.com/pod, you can sign up 10 free days, don't need a credit card, you sign up. And it just goes a long way to being like, well, yeah, this controversy is actually good. You know, it's actually a good thing. You know, it's good to stand up for yourself, because I think that message is also good. Not just, yeah, you're not going to push me around by doing a horrible behavior like that. At the same time, it's good to send a message to the business like, yeah, people stand up for themselves. It's not just, okay, yeah, we'll take the hit business-wise to have integrity, but it's actually like people respect it. So if you want to send that message, and I'm not saying don't just do it to donate money to us. I'm not raising money. And you have, you know, it is a great fantasy site. It's the best one. It's the best one. And rotowire.com/pod, maybe a lot of you already subscribed, so there won't be that many of you. But if you want to sign up, this would be a great time to do it. But if you don't want to sign up, or you already signed up, or you don't play fantasy that much or whatever, you don't need it, you can feel free to like it on iTunes or comment or, you know, whatever. Because, you know, I think a lot of times these people try to attack you thinking they can deter you. And the best response is to give it the absolute opposite effect, where it's like, oh, you just generated 50 perfect ratings. By the way, this podcast does have a 5-star rating, despite one of these guys giving it a 1-star a long time ago, one of the same sort of characters who tries to go after your business when he disagrees with you. And because all these people were fed up with it. And so, you know, you can support it and sort of just make this kind of thing backfire badly. Oh, good. Great. Thank you for giving me 100 new Substack readers. Oh, 100 new RotoWire subscribers. You know, all these great ratings on the podcast, passing the podcast to other people. That's really nice. See, that's actually even more effective, because it's like, yeah, we're benefiting from this. We're anti-fragile. You come at us, we're going to stand our ground. We're going to show people who you are, what you're doing. And we're going to say, and you know what, if you support that kind of, you know, action and standing up for yourself, well, maybe it's good for business too. So that would be nice. That's not why I do it, but, I could see it. The only guy I actually give money online to is Glenn Greenwald. I give him, like $5 a month for his Substack. And I do it because he does this in a way. He was in Brazil with a dictator president who wanted him killed, basically. I mean, he does it in a way. He was in Hong Kong with Edward Snowden, you know, who's escaped with CIA stuff, you know, or the NSA documents, you know. He was in the Hong Kong hotel. I mean, you know, he's risking his life, so I don't want to compare myself to him. It's a very, very poor man's version. But, you know, I contribute to his Substack because I feel like I want to, you know, vote for that with my money.
And it is true, you are in a unique position, and I absolutely love that you do put yourself out on the line and do speak your mind. And I'm glad to also hear that there's so much positive feedback, even if it's hidden.
It's not even hidden. I mean, there's replies and stuff. People don't really know. I think it was Rudy or somebody's like, oh, come on, you knew you were poking the bear. Like, you know, that was, and I was trying to be like, he's like, you could have phrased it differently. I'm like, no, I'm not going to censor myself, because the mob might come after me. I'm not going to do that. And it wasn't, you know, it was well received. It was like 10-1 positive. You just, that when I'm fighting with people, I'll like quote tweet the the haters. You know, I'm not tweeting all the positive. If I tweeted a million of those, then that's all you would see. But in some ways, the haters help you frame your point better. The haters helped me write 3 Substack posts, which I felt really articulated something I was already feeling. I really just felt very locked in writing those, and it was very easy. They just came out. I feel like this podcast is going to get a lot of listens as a result. I think we're going to get some signups. I mean, I feel like this battle is good. And, you know, in the end, like, you know, nothing happened to me, but it's just the intention that's so dirty and the way it's making people unable to even express themselves. And they would take it. They'd come after me. They would take everything I had, you know, if they could, they would. And just to think of the mentality of that, you know, just the lack of human decency. So that's it, man. I feel pretty, I'm trying to say as clear as I can. I just want people to know who those people are. When you see a person, fantasy baseball industry, any industry, trying to destroy somebody for a difference of opinion, go to their work, know who you're dealing with. That is the person you cannot trust. Right, because that's the person who's so desperate to comply and belong that they're so convinced of their righteousness about policing the other person that they will. And this is the fear that I have. And I wrote a Substack. I mean, we can talk about it next week because we can't talk. We're almost, you know, we've gone on for a while, but called Compliance. And then another thing that I kept hearing was, no, dude, it's a matter of empathy. And I wrote one called Empathy. And what empathy is and what empathy is not. Empathy is not doing things so that other people won't be uncomfortable. Basically, oh no, I don't want to, I'm not harmful. See, I've got my mask. That's not empathy. Empathy is feeling with somebody, getting what they're talking about, connecting with their experience as a human being. And if you felt empathy for people, you'd say, wow, this person really needs, I feel their fear and it's terrible that they can't even breathe in the fresh air. They need to get over that. And I'm not going to, keeping them comfortable is not empathy. Empathy is, I'm going to set an example, breathe in the fresh air, smile at them, be friendly when they scowl at me, and that's empathy with them. And most people don't have empathy, they use the word have empathy, they mean they're basically just justifying their own the behaviors that their tribe rewards. And so I wrote a piece on it. We don't have to go into the whole thing here, but the word empathy is misused terribly. The guy used the word empathy who called RotoWire QAnon, who basically libeled us, and it's phony. There's a real thing of empathy, and it's very important to have, but it's not what these guys are talking about. So compliance, empathy, and then of course pushback, which is what we went over most of this podcast.
Yeah, you're a content machine. I haven't read the latest 2 just because they were today, but I will do that right after we record here. You know, it must have been an eventful week and a crazy week, Liz, if we just recorded an entire podcast with Bitcoin not yet even mentioned yet. So when it must have been a wild week.
Not only not mentioned, it's down to 53.9 as we're talking.
Yeah, I know. And there's some FUD out there too. Yeah.
So I don't know exactly. I think in China somewhere, there was floods and it took a coal plant offline and that shut down a lot of the mining. So the hash rate went down. And I'm not sure how that all connects, but basically I think that was the sort of shock to the system that dropped it. I don't really sweat the FUD that much anymore. There's a great debate. I was watching Michael Saylor debate this gold guy, Frank Giustra or something. And the guy's kind of smart. He basically gives the standard objections, but he's not an idiot about it. But Saylor's I just think he's a machine. I just think he destroys him because it's just so clinically, logically, an engineer's mind, like explaining the workings of a great machine that he understands better than the other guy. It's incredible. I would recommend it. I mean, it's preaching to the choir with you already, but it's pretty badass.
I got it up right now. I see it up right now in the background. Okay.
It's like 2 hours. I watched the first 53 minutes before this podcast, and I was just like, it's just Saylor. When you listen to Michael Saylor, it gets you back. If you're starting to feel the anxiety about the FUD, Michael Saylor will be right back on course. You'd be like, oh, yes, that's right. No. What was I even thinking?
Honestly, you know who's number one for me is your guy, Nick Carter. He just absolutely eviscerated a New York Times column. He's just, that guy is smart, and I really appreciate him.
Nick Carter is so sharp. He and Saylor, the two marks, they're clear thinkers. And to me, that's such a, when a guy has a clear thinking mind and he can just say it without all of the noise, it's like, boom, you just get it right away. You know, I listen to those guys, and Nick Carter's excellent. I recommend following Saylor and Carter. They are the two best, I think.
Yeah.
And they're just, you know, and Carter's like 28 or something. He's like a kid. and Sailor's like a little older than me, but yeah, they're just it's hard, you know you have to go and I think, you know, look, we don't know, we're just again a couple of dudes that just lose money in the super contest every year, as I like to describe us, but like I really feel like when you start getting doubts, it's like, well, these people think this, but those people think this, and you're just sort of weighing different opinions. But, you know, what do you do? It's like, well, let's go down to the first principles and rebuild the case from the ground up. What money is, what, you know, the fiat system is, what money, you know, inflation is, what's going on in the economy. You know, you build it back up. What money needs to have happened, what the technology can do. You know, the basic fundamentals about it, rather than, well, what if the government shuts it down? What about China? What about that? You know, this kind of stuff is, you end up just looking at, oh, well, you know, Nassim Taleb doesn't like it. Although he took his tweets private. I think the Bitcoiners just destroyed him because
oh, wow.
Yeah, he just totally took him private. So I think they were just, it was just like relentless, but anyway, you know, oh, Nassim Taleb doesn't like it, but this guy does like it. I don't know, you know, and don't do that. That's not the way to go. Go and Michael Saylor is good, not because, oh, he's smart, look at him. It's because he makes the case from the first principles up. This discussion is so good. He just builds it from like the foundations up, and you're like, oh yeah, of course this is correct. It is self-evidently correct when you put it that way.
All right, I'll definitely check it out. That's funny about Taleb. I didn't know he did that. I know there's another column coming out this week that was like totally going against him, but
poor
I think
guy.
He's a Substack.
I mean, he's a dick. I mean, he's a total cantankerous. He insults people. But, you know, he wrote those books. I've gotten so many ideas from him. There's one guy who's like, I just refuse to believe the same person that wrote those books is the human being running the Twitter account. They got to him. They're like, they got to him. Because it's like, he started praising Jeff Bezos a couple of months ago. Thanks to Jeff Bezos, I was able to publish my books. And it was like, wait, what? You're thanking Jeff Bezos? Like, what are you doing? And he added Jeff Bezos. It was like, are you kidnapped by the CIA and you're trying to tell us something? Like, you know, when those tweets are like, write a tweet that would let people know that you're kidnapped and seeking help. You know, it was like one of those tweets.
Right.
But I don't know, you know, it might just be.
I mean, it's been revealed he never even read the Bitcoin Standard when he wrote the foreword to it. I mean, yeah, seemingly some fraudulent type behavior like that.
And he calls out so many other people for being frauds, for not reading his article or his book before criticizing him, which is probably true. But it's like, I don't know. It doesn't really matter who the man is, right? I feel sad that he's, you know, that this is happening and he's this guy, because the books are, I have actually bought his books, but I've read a lot of excerpts on Twitter and they're amazing.
Yeah.
Like, the ideas are great. It is what it is. It's not my problem, but it's just, it's crazy.
Yeah. But yeah, this is definitely a tenuous, I mean, yeah, Bitcoin right now. Yeah. It's funny that we didn't mention it because yeah, it's not, maybe because we did, because it's going the wrong way. Maybe that's why we ignored it, because it's not going the way this week.
Well,
yeah.
That's what I do. I don't look at the standings when I'm doing badly. When I'm doing well, I'm like, check the standings. Yeah. You know, like, I mean, of course, right? Everyone's
totally.
Like that.
Totally. Speaking of losing money, we got to check out here this long podcast. But speaking of losing money, I'm a crazy man list. But the family talked me into it. You know, we had a Disneyland trip booked for last April. Obviously, COVID hit. I'm not even my daughter, who is she eight? Yeah, she turned eight. Yeah, is gone yet. So, son's four, daughter's eight. We booked a trip for when is it? In June. Probably crazy during a pandemic. I don't know, but it's going to be limited capacity, overpriced, and yeah, planning on going through that. And the car ride there with my children, that might be the biggest hell of all, but I'm kind of a kid when it comes to that, and I'm kind of looking forward to it. But what are your thoughts? I'm sure you're a Disneyland guy, no doubt, Liz, right?
I actually used to go there a lot, not really to the park, but like inside it, because I used to do these ESPN hits, and they had like an ESPN.
Oh, Michael
show.
Kim, right? Was it with Michael Kim and Brian Kinney?
That was before. That was in like the LA studio, but okay. I mean, that wasn't live. It was, you know, in it, they have these remote studios, but there was a remote studio in like an ESPN Sports Zone thing that was in Disney. And so I would go to this like sports, it was like a sports bar, and I would go and, you know, do the shoot there. They'd have like a camera person, whatever. And so I went there all the time, but I never actually went. My brother went a few years ago, and he said it was so expensive. He's like, he told his daughters, we're only doing this once. It's like such a rip, but kids like it. I mean, it's a huge business for some reason, so I'm sure they'll like it, you know, but I'm not.
Yeah, my wife had to spend all day, you know, online. It's real hard because it's limited to, you know, capacities. It's hard to get the tickets and all that. It's just going to be one. It's going to be a mess, but yeah, it's going to be a surf.
All right, man. You got anything else TV wise, anything else you're dealing with?
No, that's the Oscars are Sunday night, so we'll talk about that afterward. My Promising Young Woman. Let's see if it wins. But no, I think Nomadland's going to win. Have you seen any of those movies at all? Like Nomadland's kind of, I don't know. I'm curious.
What's Nomadland? Who's in that?
It's probably going to win. Frances McDormand.
Oh, I saw that.
I saw that.
It was pretty good. Yeah. I thought it was good.
Favorite. Yeah. Okay. All right. Yeah.
I thought it was good because it was just, it wasn't like amazing, but it was just like, it was a story and it had like sort of a deep theme about what is important, and it wasn't preachy. There was no like, there was no like phoniness about it. It was just a story, you know. There was no pandering at all. That's what I liked about it.
And a type of world that I really had no clue about, you know, that existed, and some interesting stuff about Walmart. But yeah, okay, yeah. So that's the favorite to win. But that's all. That's all I got for you, Liz. Good times, and yeah, man, you hang in there. You hang in there, man.
I mean, people are like, oh, I'm so sorry. I'm like, no, feel sorry for that. All right, man. Appreciate it. Appreciate you risking your job every time you come on this podcast.
Yeah, no doubt. Thank you. I'm glad you do. All right, man. Okay, right. Later, Liz.
Take it easy, Dalton.